It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Once political kryptonite, legalizing recreational marijuana is now a key issue Democratic presidential hopefuls are highlighting to prove street cred to their base.
This is becoming a litmus test in the Democratic primaries as all of these different candidates are competing to be perceived as the most progressive candidate.
Polling last month from Quinnipiac University found 60% of voters favor legalizing marijuana, numbers that freed candidates to push for legalization.
Well, in case you haven't noticed, a lot of states are now doing just that.
Do not talk to me about legalizing marijuana unless in the same breath you talk to me about the expunging the records of the millions of people.
Senator Cory Booker has a plan to legalize marijuana at the federal level. Four fellow 2020 contenders are co-sponsors.
Have you ever smoked?
I have.
Okay.
Like I inhaled. Listen, I think that it gives a lot of people joy and we need more joy.
Recreational marijuana is legal in 10 states and the District of Columbia. Presidential candidate and former Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper oversaw the nation's first experiment to legalize, even though he initially opposed it. He now favors reclassification of the drug and changes in federal law to solve problems like lack of banking.
If you want a recipe for how do you get corruption and create a generation of gangsters, make sure that a new industry is all cash.
With his focus on drugs at the border, President Trump has been mostly hands-off. As a candidate, he said it should be up to the states. Since then, the White House message has hardened.
But he does strongly believe that we have to enforce federal law.
I think this is going to be an issue for the Democrats, and they're going to hope to try to use this against Trump in the general. But I don't think it's going to work very well.
It was Alicia Cunha with her report not long ago on Fox News. You know, now 10 states have legalized marijuana. New Jersey and Illinois are both considering it. And you just heard Alicia say that most Americans are just fine with that. Our next guest says using cannabis or any drug is ultimately a personal choice. What to do about legalization is a political decision. But whether marijuana is dangerous to the brain and can ultimately cause violence is a scientific question with a hard yes or no answer. We have that answer. It's time you heard it. Alex Berenson has just written a new book called Tell Your Children the Truth About Marijuana, Mental Illness, and Violence. And he joins us this morning. Good morning, Alex.
Hi. Hi, Sandy. Hey,
thanks for joining us. I want to just tell people that you are a former New York Times reporter. You're an award-winning novelist. You're from New York. You went to Yale. You joined the New York Times in 1999. You covered all kinds of things from the drug industry to Hurricane Katrina. You served two stints as a correspondent in Iraq. And I'm going to stop for a second to ask you something. You know, Vietnam was notable in one respect, many respects, but one of them was the involvement in drug usage of American soldiers. Did you see anything like that when you were in Iraq?
No, although I think things did actually get worse in both Iraq and Afghanistan in terms of drug use by the troops as the war was dragged on. I think at the beginning, morale was very high. And unfortunately, especially in Afghanistan, as the wars have dragged on, there's been more drug use. The other thing that's happened is that in a lot of places, American Army or, you know, Marine units are embedded with Afghan Army units, and sometimes there's a lot of drug use in those units. So there's just more access to, you know, marijuana, hashish, opium, heroin, all the bad stuff. And unfortunately, you know, if there's access and if oversight diminishes and if things go on for a long time, you know, there's going to be people who use. But back in 2003, 2004, it wasn't like that as much.
Okay. Let me continue to tell you about Alex, because in the course of being assigned in Iraq, he wrote a novel called The Faithful Spy, and that was his first novel, and he won the Edgar Award for the Mystery Writers of America Best First Novel. He lives in the Hudson Valley with his wife and children, writes fiction, and sometimes still writes for the Times and other things. And so there you go, Alex Berenson. Alex, I want to ask you a question, personal question, before we jump into this topic. What in the world made you tackle this? It's not exactly a politically correct subject, especially given your background and experience. So why this?
So I got involved in this because my wife is a forensic psychiatrist. That means that she deals with the criminally mentally ill. And so she was seeing tons of cases where people used cannabis and committed really horrific crimes. Or in some cases, descended into severe mental illness after years of using and then committed horrific crimes. And she would tell me, I mean, this happened over and over again. And she would tell me about these cases, over a period of years. And I think I was quite skeptical of what she had to tell me, actually kind of stupidly, to be honest with you, because she's the one who saw the cases and she's the one who trained at, Harvard and Columbia and had an MD. But more importantly, she really saw this stuff firsthand. And I think she got tired of my pushing back on her. And she said, why don't you go read the science for yourself? And when I did, and I was a drug industry reporter for the time, so I had, it's pretty deep experience reading some of these scientific papers. I was shocked at how strong the science connecting marijuana and mental illness really is. And then secondarily, I was shocked that, nobody knew this. I considered myself a reasonably well-educated person, and I had no idea. And it struck me that both the science and the fact that nobody knew about this outside of the psychiatric community were really big, important issues that I needed to write a book about.
Do you remember, as I'm sure this happened some time ago when you and your wife started talking about this, but do you remember one of the stories that she may have shared with you that was kind of a gripping that... just kind of got your attention and made you come her way a little bit?
I mean, honestly, there were so many of them. And the problem with psychosis related violence is it's horrible. Okay, this is not like two people get into a bar fight, or this is not like two guys pulling guns on each other during a bank robbery or a mugging or something. This is the kind of violence where I do remember a case where a mother threw her kids off the roof of a building. Mm. Okay. And there was another case where, there were more than one case like this, but there was a case I specifically remember upstate where a guy, took an axe to his grandmother. Mm. I mean, that's the kind of violence that psychosis causes. It causes just horrific physical violence. Oftentimes it's not firearm violence, it's physical violence against really helpless people.
I want us to come back to that. I want us to explore the psychosis connection more carefully in a minute, but I want to go back to kind of my line of questioning here, which was given, look, you and I both know that marijuana has been so mainstreamed in corporate life, in professional life, a lot of people that you wouldn't think I thought that people sure. that were on marijuana were, bikers and, generally not necessarily very productive people, but that's not true. It has been mainstream. So I'm sure in the world in which you travel, Alex, you've been around a lot of very successful people that you know smoke. And they're all in favor of it. So I'm wondering what kind of opposition, you surely must have encountered opposition when you decided to write this book.
Sure. I mean, I've faced tremendous opposition since the book came out. And just to go back to the violence for just a second, one reason people don't believe this, much less understand it, is that because this kind of violence is so terrible, for the most part, it doesn't get covered very thoroughly. In other words, we don't want to look at the case of the mother who threw her kids off a roof, especially if she's you know, especially if she's poor and, you know, the kids were, you know, didn't have fathers or didn't have fathers in the picture, that woman's just going to get sent to either a prison or a forensic hospital like the one my wife ran. And we're never going to hear from her again. And no one's going to want to talk about that case. So it's very interesting with cannabis. There are a lot of successful people who use cannabis, and I would say most of them use it occasionally. Okay, they use it like successful people use alcohol, which is to say, you know, I have a friend who he used to drink every night when he wanted to go to sleep. Now, that's not a great way to use alcohol, but, you know, if you're having a couple of drinks and you're putting yourself to sleep, so be it. Now, some nights he has a couple of drinks, and some nights he has a couple of hits from his vape pen, and he goes to sleep. And he's successful. He's an entrepreneur. He runs a business. He's successful. Okay. So, and the cannabis industry likes to promote those stories. And people who use like to promote those stories. But the fact is that most cannabis in the United States, even more than alcohol, is consumed by a small group of people who use it very heavily and who, by any reasonable standard, have a problem with it. And what I mean by that is that 50% in the U.S. since 2005, which is when this wave of legalization really began, the number of people who use one time in a year has gone up about 50%. So it's gone from about 25 million to more like 40 million. But the number of people who use every day has tripled. That's gone from about 3 million to almost 9 million. So what that means is that use is really most cannabis is sold, whether it's legal or illegal, to a small group of people who are using all day, every day, or certainly using every day, and probably using all day, every day, in a way that if they were consuming alcohol that way, we'd call them alcoholics. Instead, because cannabis has this weird myth around it, a lot of these people will gladly tell you, oh, I'm a Wake and Baker. And those people, a lot of them, have psychiatric problems related to their cannabis use. Okay, yeah. And so what I'm saying is that actually both things can be true. It can be true that there are successful people who use this drug, who use it occasionally or even regularly, and they use it in the same way that, you know, successful people can use alcohol. And it doesn't, you know, it doesn't hurt their lives necessarily. It doesn't cause them to become violent. It doesn't cause them to have problems with their spouses or their children or any or at work. You know, it's recreational use that they control. And at the same time, this drug can be very dangerous to people who use it heavily. Both those things can be true, and both those things are true.
I found it really interesting. I think I got this stat from your work that something like 64% of people, Americans polled, approve of legalizing marijuana, and yet a very, as you just said, but you didn't give a percentage, very small percentage actually use. Isn't that strange?
That's correct. And the reason for that is that people, and in part it's because people don't use. And a lot of people who, you know, who used, let's say, 20 or 30 or 40 years ago, you know, they used this drug a little bit, they quit, they don't have any idea what it actually is today. Okay, it is far, far stronger than it was 20 years ago, much less 40 years ago. It's far more likely to be psychiatrically dangerous because it has much more THC in it. THC is the chemical in cannabis that gets you high and also the psychiatric risk. And at the same time, it has much less CBD. CBD is the chemical in cannabis that, it, to the extent cannabis, you know, has positive benefit, it's probably from the CBD. And CBD actually counteracts the effects of THC. And
Hold that thought. Because the music's playing. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to pick up on that because I do want to know. You know, a lot of people that are pushing this are older folk, like the Bernie Sanders of this world, who have fond memories of marijuana, and it gives you joy, as our presidential candidate just said a few minutes ago. But you are making the case that it's not the same kind, and we're going to come back with that again. The book is called Tell Your Children the Truth About Marijuana, Mental Illness, and Violence. Alex Berenson, the author, will be right back after this. Sandy Rios in the Morning, AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Eight states are considering bills to legalize recreational cannabis. including New York, where Governor Andrew Cuomo says it'll happen by June.
We will get marijuana done. It's not a question of political desire. It's a question of practical reality.
Passing a bill, though, to legalize marijuana is a tall order. Just last week, New Jersey's assembly abruptly called off a vote to legalize recreational pot, proof marijuana remains a divisive issue. In March, a new study found smoking highly potent cannabis on a daily basis quadruples users' odds of experiencing a psychotic episode. Researchers say highly potent marijuana contains THC levels higher than 10%. THC is the chemical that causes the drug's psychological effects. That's alarming considering government data shows America's pot is getting stronger. The average THC level in confiscated marijuana has grown from 4% in 2000 to 12% today.
Today's marijuana is much more harmful than it used to be.
Another new study found marijuana-related emergency room visits have more than tripled in Colorado since 2012.
So there's all these new negative outcomes. We weren't seeing them in the 60s, but we're seeing them a lot more now because of this rush to legalize marijuana.
Did you have anything in mind?
Medical marijuana dispensaries like Harmony in New Jersey argue legalization will ensure regulation.
Thank you.
We actually test all of our marijuana and make sure that it's safe and effective.
While studies have shown a link, they have not proven that smoking cannabis causes psychosis. Doctors say there are legitimate medical benefits to smoking marijuana, like pain relief.
All right, that was Brian Yenis of Fox News recently with a report on marijuana. And the book we're talking about is called Tell Your Children, The Truth About Marijuana, Mental Illness, and Violence, written by Alex Berenson, our guest. Let me just read a portion from his book. Psychosis brings violence, and cannabis-linked violence is spreading. In the four states that first legalized, murders have risen 25% since legalization, even more than the recent national increase. And in Uruguay, which allowed retail sales until July 2017, murders soared this year. That's just a tiny bit of the stats that Alex Berenson presents in his book. And Alex, before the break, we sort of touched on, I mentioned that people like Bernie Sanders and a lot of people that are in Congress now, because they're mostly all older people. You know, remember the good old days of that fun marijuana smoking and frolicking in the grass at these hippie festivals. And you say that the marijuana that's being distributed today is nothing like that. Please pick that up if you could.
Sure. So the fact is that in the 60s and the 70s, cannabis had almost no THC. And as we were talking about before the break, THC is the chemical in cannabis that gets you high. And in fact, in states that are legal now, a lot of people don't even smoke cannabis itself. They don't smoke, you know, what we think of as a sort of leafy green flower that you put in a bowl and light up. They smoke pure THC extract or near pure THC extract, which is this kind of orangey, yellowy stuff that you do something called dabbing. You heat it up to about 700 degrees and you inhale the vapor. And if that sounds more like smoking crack than smoking a joint, you're right. So going back to the scientific issue, today people are smoking stuff that is maybe 25% cannabis, or I'm sorry, 25% THC in their cannabis, and sometimes they're smoking this THC extract, and it has very little of the compound in cannabis that's protective, which is called CBD. And a lot of your listeners may have heard about CBD. I mean, you can go into drugstores all over the country and buy CBD cream and CBD oil and all this stuff that is supposed to be, you know, it's great for your dog's arthritis and it's great for, you know, your migraines and it helps you sleep better. There are a lot of claims made about CBD as medicine that are basically unproven. But people get confused and they say, oh, well, this is CBD. This is cannabis. This must be safe. And therefore, let's legalize all of it. What they don't realize is that the cannabis that their kids or grandkids are using has basically no CBD in it. It's really potent. It has a ton of THC in it. And once again, THC is the chemical that causes both you to get high when you use and causes your psychiatric problems if you're prone to those. Or sometimes even if you're not prone to those, just from using. And I feel like I have to make this point over and over again, because the cannabis industry wants to confuse people about it. They want to confuse people about the difference between THC and CBD. And in fact, I was on Fox a couple of weeks ago, and I was debating, somebody who owns a dispensary, and she said, well, you can buy cannabis in every Rite Aid. And that's not true. She knows that's not true. You can buy CBD at a Rite Aid. But again, CBD is not why people use cannabis to get high. So you asked me before, you said, well, public support for this has gone up and up and up. And, you know, at the same time, most people don't use. Why is that? And the reason for that is the cannabis legalization lobby has been incredibly effective about spreading this confusion about cannabis. And on top of that, the people in the media, and I can say this because I was a reporter for the New York Times, have not challenged them. People in the media have done a terrible job asking the right questions about this drug, about what it does to people, and about the motives of the people who want legalization. And what's so amazing to me, so I was a reporter for the New York Times who covered the drug industry. I saw the way drug companies would promote their products, and they would go to the very ends of the truth. They would push to the absolute limit of what they would say. They would hide studies. They would hide negative effects. And these were pharmaceutical companies, okay? At the same time, we have a terrible opioid crisis in the United States. We have tens of thousands of people who die every year from prescription and non-prescription opioids. We've had almost 1 million people die since 2000. It's a national emergency. We know that the tobacco companies lied to us for decades and decades about the health effects of tobacco. Why on earth do we think that the people who are selling marijuana are going to behave any differently? They are also selling an addictive recreational drug. Why do we think they're going to tell us the truth? But the people in my business, my old business, at the New York Times, at the Washington Post, just about everywhere, have not asked the right questions. And it is immensely frustrating to me as a reporter.
You know, it just occurs to me, this is a subjective comment on my part, but everything becomes political. It seems to me that maybe the old tobacco industry giants were opponents, maybe, of people that were more leftist in their views, and they were more willing to go after them than they are the proponents of marijuana, who are not generally, Republican. They're not generally Republicans. You know, I think they make it all political, and there must be a ton of money to be made here by everyone.
I think you're absolutely correct. Tobacco, it is grown in the South. The companies were viewed as Southern companies. Tobacco taxes are higher in the North. There certainly was more reason, or it was easier for people on the left to oppose tobacco. Marijuana, the legalization lobby has framed this as a social justice issue. Oh, there are all these people in jail who, just young black men whose only crime was using cannabis. And that is simply a lie.
Yes, okay.
It is not a lie that you're more likely to be arrested if you're black or Hispanic for possessing cannabis. But almost nobody goes to prison for cannabis possession. I mean nobody, even in the South. And by the way, there's a really interesting disconnect in the black community around cannabis that doesn't exist so much in the white community. Older black people don't like cannabis, a lot of them. And they remember the way alcohol and tobacco companies targeted their community. And they are very suspicious of the idea, why would we invite this community, this drug into our community? Younger black people don't seem to be as suspicious of cannabis for whatever reason. And one of the, genius moves that the legalization lobby has made is they've made this about social justice, when in reality, again, there is almost nobody in prison for cannabis use. And, when I talk to, and I'm white, but there are black people who I talk to and say, this idea that we're going to solve the racial and social justice issues in law enforcement by legalizing cannabis is a joke. If cops want to frisk young black men, they're going to find an excuse. And we don't want anybody, white or black, smoking cannabis on the streets. And, So I think those are all like legitimate arguments to make around this. And I think there is a, you know, we can discuss the social justice issues, but what we shouldn't forget is that this is first and foremost an issue of health and science and medicine.
I like that. And I think you're absolutely right about it, Alex. And I share with you offline. I have a strong, I am not unbiased about marijuana. I hate it. I hate what it's done to friends of mine. And I'll just say, repeat what I said to you. I've seen them become stupid and lazy. I know those are harsh words, but that's what I've seen. And it's just appalling to me that people would squander their real lives going into some fantasy and being controlled by some substance. I can hardly comprehend it. So I get a little ticked. But you are absolutely right that we have to argue it based on the facts, because I'm pretty confident the facts are going to back up the fact that it's not a good idea to use it.
Well, it's funny that you talk about the you know, people who become sort of stereotypical stoners and get lazy and lose their motivation. I mean, that's clearly a real phenomenon. And in fact, after the book came out, I was sharply criticized by some people who were, basically pro-legalization people who said, well, you know, you're not talking about the real risks here. You're talking about the psychosis risk, which, yes, it might happen, but it doesn't happen very often. Now, by the way, I think it happens more often than they will admit, much more often than they will admit. But they said, you know, the real risk is that there's a real societal disadvantage associated with using cannabis a lot. In other words, you don't get married, you don't get anywhere in your job, you know, you wind up living in a basement somewhere, being high all the time. And I said to these people, I said, okay, so you're saying that that happens all the time, okay, whereas the risk that I'm talking about happens less often. And you're telling me that that's the reason we should legalize this drug?
It doesn't make sense, but it's effective. I'm telling you that the public relations work done to legalize this is masterful. I know you know this because you've written a whole bunch about it. But I want us to talk, Alex, more specifically about some practical things to help people understand. They already know I have a huge bias against it, but you've really written about this in a very scientific and careful way, a journalistic way. So you talk about you alluded to this, but let's talk about it. The opioid crisis is huge in this country. Everyone's upset about that. I mean, we've got to stop it. Stop it pulling their hair out. Oh, they've made all these laws that really, to me, make no sense. They actually punish the people that really need pain relief sometimes. But that's another subject. But how in the world does marijuana use actually link with opioid use and the crisis? What do you see as the connection there?
Sandy, that's a great question. And so in the 70s, by the way, one of the reasons cannabis use, one of the reasons parents really, went against it was they said, well, we're seeing that our kids who use cannabis, a lot of them are starting to use cocaine. And they didn't like that. And they said, you know what? We think this is a bad idea. So, and cannabis, support for cannabis use collapsed. So what's happened in the last 10 or 15 years? The U.S. has seen rising cannabis use. Canada has seen rising cannabis use, and they've seen a terrible opioid crisis. And what has the cannabis legalization lobby done? They've done the most genius thing ever. They've said, oh, not only are these two things not linked, don't believe your lying eyes, cannabis can actually help solve the opioid crisis. Based that on a couple of really incredibly weak studies, and I could spend the next hour telling you why they're so weak. I go into it in my book. Here's the truth. If you want to judge whether somebody using cannabis is more likely to use opioids later, the way to do that is to look at a group of people who are using cannabis, compare them to a group of people who aren't using, and look what happens over a period of years. And guess what? When you do that, you find out that people who are using cannabis are much more likely, 3 times more likely, to use cannabis, to use opioids 3 years later. So not only does it not look like cannabis can help the opioid crisis, it looks like exactly what you would expect, that when you encourage people to get high and use a recreational intoxicant, some of them move on to using more powerful intoxicants, opioids. You start with cannabis, you wind up with opioids, and parents have seen this, and parents talk about this. They just don't get their voices out over the cannabis lobby, and it sickens me. It sickens me that the cannabis lobby promotes cannabis as a solution for the opioid crisis. Again, let's talk about this drug as what it is. It is a recreational intoxicant. It's like alcohol, okay? It's something that grown-ups should be able to use if they want to get high on occasion. I mean, I'm not saying that's a great idea, but I'm saying that's what it is. When we start pretending it's medicine, when we start pretending it's a cure for other problems, we confuse people about it, we encourage use of it, and terrible consequences result.
Absolutely. And, you know, I was just reading an article this morning that current drug tests show that marijuana use is at a 14-year high among workers. And yeah. So you know that that's going to slow down productivity. It's just common sense that that's going to interfere with what happens on the job. But we have to take another break here, Alex. There's the music. Alex Berenson, my guest. And actually, when we return, Alex, I'd like for us to go into the psychosis part of it a little bit more. We touched on it, but you started the show by talking about your wife's experiences as a doctor, forensic doctor dealing with this kind of stuff. So let's go back to that, because you have a lot of examples in your book. And the book, by the way, is called Tell Your Children, The Truth About Marijuana, Mental Illness, and Violence. And we'll be back to discuss it after this. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
I'm very happy.
The riskiest part of smoking was the possibility of a criminal record.
Yeah!
In downtown Montreal, hundreds of people lined up Wednesday four blocks as early as 4 a.m. for the grand opening of a government-owned marijuana store. Canada is now just the second country and the largest in the world to legalize recreational marijuana use nationwide.
Look, we're doing it. The sky hasn't fallen. In fact, everyone seems to be having a jolly good time.
It's a promise Prime Minister Justin Trudeau campaigned on to combat the fact Canada has among the highest rate of marijuana use in the world, according to the Canadian government.
By controlling and regulating the production and sale of marijuana, we will better be able to protect our communities, protect our kids, and ensure the public safety.
There are, however, new concerns, especially at the United States border. Fear legal Canadian marijuana will cross illegally into America's black market. U.S. Customs and Border Protection is warning those who work in the legal marijuana industry or admit to smoking pot could be deemed inadmissible.
Even if it is legal in a state, federal law supersedes state law in the United States. So it would be illegal federally, you know, for anyone to enter the United States with marijuana.
Nine states have legalized recreational marijuana. Michigan and North Dakota have recreational legalization on the ballot in November. Some critics fear the marijuana industry will become the next big tobacco.
They're not out for public health. This is an industry that wants to hook kids and other people with pot gummies, candies, pot sodas, unlimited potency of different marijuana products that will be out there.
At this hour, the line continues to stretch around the block, all different ages and walks of life. Under the law, customers must be at least 18 years old, and Canadians can purchase marijuana online and have it delivered right to their front doors.
All right, that was Brian Yenis, and that was October of 2019. So since then, another state has legalized marijuana. Brian's been doing some great reporting on this, by the way. My guest, Alex Berenson, has written this new book called Tell Your Children the Truth About Marijuana, Mental Illness and Violence. Let me just also say that in the preparation of writing this book, Alex did do some international study. He went to the London Institute and other areas, and it's an international problem. In fact, Alex, where would you say marijuana is the most acute in its problems it's causing?
The U.S. and Canada.
Okay.
We have the worst problem. In Britain, actually, they're much more aware of the psychosis risks than we are, and that's because. It's in part because of this group in London, this group of psychiatrists and researchers who's done a lot. They've done a lot to educate people in Europe and especially in Britain about this. Here, the legalizers just control the debate completely. But let's talk about psychosis a little bit because, you know, that's an issue that I think is confusing to people. A lot of people, unless you have somebody with severe mental illness in your family, may not know what this is. So psychosis is what psychiatrists call when you break from reality. So, you know, essentially that means your mind goes to a place you can't control. So you might be having hallucinations, you might have delusions, you might have paranoia, you know, my family's poisoning me, the cops are out to get me. These are very painful thoughts. And in some cases they lead people to do terrible things. But even when they don't, they're very painful and they make existing, you know, as a person in society very difficult. So if you use cannabis, you can have a psychotic episode. That's true of a lot of drugs, but it's especially true of cannabis. And usually these episodes are temporary, and the industry's actually done a great job of getting people to laugh them off or to laugh at people. And famously, Maureen Dowd, the New York Times columnist, went to Colorado and had a marijuana edible and had a terrible reaction to it, where effectively she was paranoid and in her hotel room for a full night. Now, if you have an episode that's so bad that you start to act out, you might wind up in the emergency room. And you are going to be diagnosed almost certainly with cannabis-induced psychosis. That's a real medical diagnosis, cannabis-induced psychosis. And that happens much more frequently than people realize. So we know, beyond doubt, that marijuana can induce this temporary psychosis in people. The question can it actually induce permanent psychosis? And permanent psychosis, most of the time, what psychiatrists call that is schizophrenia. So schizophrenia is a very complicated disease. You know, even now, after 150 years of studying severe mental illness, there's a lot we don't know about it. But basically, schizophrenia is a state of permanent or semi-permanent psychosis. And it has other symptoms too. For example, you might actually you get depressed. You have a hard time functioning. You have a hard time working because you can't get out of bed. So people with schizophrenia tend to die younger than other Americans. They tend not to get married. They tend not to have kids. It's a really terrible, disabling disease. And the question is, can marijuana cause that in some people who otherwise wouldn't get it? And the cannabis lobby hates this issue. They hate any discussion of this issue. They call it reefer madness. The problem is that the best studies show that cannabis can cause schizophrenia. Wow. It can cause some people, especially if they use as teenagers, especially if they use a lot, especially if they use high potency cannabis, to become permanently mentally ill who wouldn't have been. That's what the best evidence says now, and anyone who says otherwise is not telling the truth. And the question is,
I don't want to really interrupt you, but I just, when you talk about this, of course, you can't really say that. I don't need to tell you without some sort of proof, Alex. So sure. there must be traceable evidence that people who have been having these mental breakdowns are having higher instances of use of marijuana prior to that.
Oh, yes. Even the cannabis lobby doesn't disagree with that. People who use cannabis are much more likely to develop schizophrenia. The question is why. So the cannabis lobby likes to say, well, we don't know. Maybe some of those people were becoming ill beforehand and they're quote-unquote self-medicating. Or maybe, and by the way, that theory doesn't hold up at all, because if you take people who have schizophrenia and their symptoms are under control, they're not having active psychotic symptoms at the time, and they start using cannabis again, they get psychotic very quickly, a lot of them. And so that is really strong evidence that people are not self-medicating. Then sometimes they say, well, maybe there's some underlying gene that causes people both to use cannabis and to get schizophrenia. And the evidence on that, and people have looked at the genetic, they've looked at sort of large genetic libraries to try to see, the evidence on that looks very weak. And by the way, the tobacco industry used to say that too. They used to say, well, maybe the same thing that makes people smoke is what makes them have lung cancer. So there's lots of ways to try to tease this out. And scientists, like the people at King's College London, like scientists in Australia, like scientists in Sweden, they've been doing very careful epidemiologic research, which means you look at large groups of people and you try to determine how changes in their behavior lead to changes in their health. They've been looking at these large groups. They've also been doing other studies, and all the evidence points the same way. Now, I would say we know with 100% certainty that tobacco causes lung cancer, even though we've never had a study where we've made people smoke cigarettes and seen how many of them develop lung cancer. We still know it because there's so much other evidence. Are we at 100% certainty with cannabis and schizophrenia? No, we are not. But we are not at 50% certainty either. We are in the 90s, probably the high 90s. And so the question I think you have to ask yourself, if you're the parent of a child, if you're a lawmaker, or if you're in this industry, at what point do you need to start telling people the honest truth about this? And I think we are way past that point already.
Oh,
so
I do too.
We should be warning people, not encouraging them to use this as medicine.
I'm curious, Alex, when we have touched on, you know, the increase in criminal acts, increase in murders, incredible increase in murders in areas that have legalized. But what's the crossover between the whole psychosis thing and criminal acts? Is there an uptick in criminal acts that have nothing to do with psychosis? I mean, so what's the link there?
So, okay. First of all, let me be clear. We don't know yet that legalized marijuana causes a statewide increase in violence. We can say these places that have legalized have had an increase, but we can't yet prove that it was caused by marijuana. There's good evidence that it was, but we certainly haven't proved it yet. So here's the thing. When you get psychotic, you are at high risk to commit violence. And unfortunately, the worse the violence, the higher the risk. So people who are schizophrenic are about 20 times, and that's not an exaggeration, they're about 20 times as likely to commit homicides as healthy people.
Wow.
But the mental illness advocacy community doesn't like talking about this because they're afraid it's going to stigmatize people with mental illness, which I understand. So here's the other thing we need to know about this. Most of that risk comes when people who are mentally ill use drugs. In other words, if you're mentally ill, even if you have schizophrenia, but you're taking your medicine, you're taking your antipsychotic medicine, you're taking care of yourself, you're not getting too stressed out, you're not at exceptionally high risk. If you stop taking your antipsychotic medicine and you start using recreational drugs, your risk goes off the charts. And the number one drug that these people like to use is cannabis. But unfortunately, a drug that causes paranoia in people who are prone to delusion is a really bad idea. And that's where you get the kind of violence that my wife sees.
Mm. Alex, you have two kids, and I have children. And this book, of course, is Tell Your Children, but it's an adult book. So how are you going to talk to your kids? How are you going to counsel them? How are you going to set hedges about them so that they don't get caught up in this? Are you going well, this is a personal opinion, but I'll ask you. Are you going to tell your children nothing ever? You know, that's it. No marijuana because of these things. How are you going to approach that yourself?
So what I'm going to say to them is a couple of things. First of all, you know what? Like, you're going to be an adult one day, and you're not going to have me to tell you what to do or not to do at that point. And by then, your brain will be more developed. And, you know, if you want to use alcohol, if you want to use cannabis, do I think it's a great idea? No, there's pros and cons to it. But at that point, it will be your choice. But when you're 12, when you're 14, when you're 16, you're 18, your brain is in a crucial stage of development. And using any drug, but especially using cannabis, can be very dangerous to you. Dangerous in ways that you don't understand at the time. So please, please do not use when you're a teenager. And if there are things that I can do to help with that, I will do whatever I can. And I'm going to say to them, the people who tell you that marijuana is safer than alcohol are lying. Okay, marijuana is physically safer than alcohol. You can't overdose and die on it. That's certainly true. But it is more neurotoxic than alcohol, and it is certainly more neurotoxic for teenagers. So don't think that this is a safe substitute for alcohol. And I am certainly not going to permit you to use this in our house. And I am not going to pretend that I'm okay with this.
And how about adding? And it's not funny. You know, I find a lot of the movies that we go to now. We like a lot of Sundance film, foreign films, all kinds, but American films primarily, they will throw in a scene of adult, like senior adults especially, using marijuana, and it's just so funny to them. They think it's so funny. It's not funny to me, so I'm going to add that with my kids. It's not funny.
It's not fun. I'll tell you, you know, my joke about this is when I want to get psychotic, I don't smoke pot. I watch this HBO show called High Maintenance, which which features the adventures of this guy who sells pot in New York, of course.
Really?
Riding his bicycle around Williamsburg. And in a single episode last season, he delivered to a pregnant woman, I'm not joking, a 9-month pregnant woman and a teenage girl. And I don't know, I mean, if he were delivering meth, would we be joking about that? If he were delivering alcohol, would we be joking about that? If somehow this drug has a community of people who don't just think it's okay for themselves to use, they want to actively promote its use. I don't understand that.
Yeah, well, we're going to make sure as much as we can, Alex, that stops. And you've done your part, certainly by your salvo. So the book is called Tell Your Children the Truth About Marijuana, Mental Illness, and Violence. And we're going to put the link on our Facebook page. I recommend that you buy this book, that you read it, and you start reporting and telling your children and your friends. It really isn't funny. Alex Berenson, thank you so much for your information today. Thanks for sharing with us. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy, thanks so much for having me.